Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
Ham Nation, episode number 30, January 3rd, 2012. DIY, the magic of amateur radio. Hello, everybody, and here we are. Ham Nation is cranking up and on the air. The antennas are up. Signals are good. And I think we're going to have a great show tonight. We have missed all of you, and we have the whole suspect partners tonight. Oh, boy, a bunch of them. So don't go away and get ready to take notes, because we have some really cool things going on. Gordo, how are you doing in Southern California? Happy New Year to you.
Well, Happy New Year to everyone from Gordo. Got Julian here on the camera, on the monitor, and we are fine. Thanks to the chat room for keeping us on our toes. But we're going to have a great program. Back to you.
Yay. And Cheryl, is it snowing in northern Illinois yet? Cheryl, how are you doing? You got your fur out? What's
up? I'm doing really great. Thank you. And Happy New Year to everybody. Happy 2012. And we're back here. We don't have any snow here in northeastern Illinois right at the moment, which I'm happy for. But it does make it a little more festive now and then. Glad to be here. And hi to everyone that's watching.
All right. Well, it's nice to have you back again, and want you to keep a little watch on the chat room. We're going to come back to you periodically through the show. What we're going to do tonight, first off, we're introducing the DIY video, and Gordo will get into this in just a bit with the whole details. But this is a video that's been worked on all year by Bill Pasternak and Dave Bell. And we're very, very honored to have Bill with us. We'll bring him on here in just a minute and let you know what's going on with this new video. And in the meantime, if you get a chance, and of course, if you don't belong to the league, you might want to check this out. Get involved in the ARRL. They do a lot of things that are great for amateur radio. I love the magazine. QST is wonderful. And this month, in January, they feature a whole article about this great do-it-yourself magic of amateur radio. It goes through the entire DVD telling you all about what's going on. And Alan Pitts has been so much help to us putting this together. Gordon, you have some information about that too. I know, were you in any of the videos of that, or were you around when some of that was shot, Gordo?
Oh, I sure was. I was watching Bill and his complete team in both Plano, Texas, as well as in Dayton, Ohio at Hamvention doing the video. And they did a fine, fine job. And it got my attention when Alan sent out these little pins that said DIY. And I thought, now, what does that stand for? So I knew the league was up to something big. And knowing that Dave Bill and Bill Pasternak and others had something to do with it, it's going to be a great video. So, Bob, if you're ready, I'm ready. Why don't we shoot for the video first, and then we'll go and bring up Bill live and direct. He's in the wings right now. So, John, if you would not mind, please bring up the DIY amateur radio video from the American Radio Relay League.
Of NYC Resistor Hacker Group. I'm also a ham radio operator, call sign KC2 UHB. I'm at the Dayton Hamvention right now and would like to share a little bit of my hobby with you.
Something that we're doing with Stanford University.
Okay.
The Dayton Hamvention in Dayton, Ohio is an annual event that's a maker's haven for amateur radio operators, or hams as we're called.
You come up here and look at the meter, and they don't sound the same. Why?
There are 3 days of exhibits, demonstrations, forums, dealers, and sellers inside. And outside is one of the world's largest flea markets. Habs were the original makers and hackers, using new, used, and scavenged parts to make transmitters, receivers, and antennas capable of communicating with other hams anywhere on Earth and beyond. They even contact astronaut hams on the International Space Station. In fact, most astronauts are hams, licensed by their own countries.
November 0, Kilo Golf Mike, we've got you loud and clear aboard the International Space Station. Welcome aboard.
Okay, Colonel, very good. Nice to make a contact with you again. And, hey, just a question.
I saw your Twitter profile picture. Is that Everest Base Camp ahead?
Yeah, it sure is. It's Mount Everest, and I was there. That was taken at base camp. Have you been there?
Oh, yeah, we've been to base camp a couple of times. And
in this hobby, communicating is the key word. And when computers came along, they fit right into the ham's wide world. Using their technical skills and imagination, hams put together advanced communication networks connected by radio waves instead of wires.
By powering up this radio, it becomes part of the mesh. The network discovers it, utilizes it, and then this radio, in turn, repeats services out to the parking lot and other services that are exterior to the building.
The ham radio bands are the last place in the radio spectrum where individuals can make or modify their own wireless equipment, try ideas out, and see what happens. This group from Austin, Texas, is experimenting with wireless mesh networks that can grow and adapt with plug-and-play flexibility.
What I did was I took the OLSR Daemon software, compiled it on this little bad guy, and got it part of the mesh. This'll mesh with the other node.
A mesh unit is nothing more than a wireless router modified by ham radio operators with new software and bigger antennas. Turn a mesh unit on, and it automatically connects to become part of an extended network that can relay any kind of data. Mesh networks are so smart that if one node fails or goes offline, the message will still get delivered.
And then you have 1K resistors, which are brown, black, and red.
Making things is one of the joys of being a ham radio operator. This group at the Escondido California Radio Club is building radio direction finders used to locate hidden transmitters as a sport or to find lost victims in emergencies.
Your antenna will be the last thing that we assemble, and that will go to the outside screw terminals. And it's the difference between the signal going to each antenna is how we find out which way the signal is coming from.
The club is one of over 7,000 active ham radio clubs in the U.S. Many ham radio clubs are affiliated with ARRL, the National Association for Amateur Radio. Radio clubs are the in-person aspect of the hobby.
Hold it up high so that your body doesn't affect it.
They're similar to hacker groups, but with a communications attitude.
It's in there. I just can't see.
Locating things by radio is a useful skill, especially if that item is a weather balloon.
If it would go through right through that patch, that'd be good. Just so we could, it's kind of fun to watch it go up.
Carrying a TV camera and a ham radio video transmitter.
In 3, 2, 1. Yeah!
After the launch, the balloon's tracked by eye, and then with a homebrew APRS, automatic position reporting system using GPS satellite data. It's an imaginative combining of technologies.
This guy puts out 2 watts of power, and it has band modules, so you can easily change from band to band. Has a dummy load and power meter circuitry, and that's for a guy who wants to have more power.
Like the challenge of catching a big fish with lightweight tackle, some hams enjoy making and using low-power equipment to catch the big one. This annual meeting of hams in Fairborn, Ohio is called 4 Days in May. It's for hams interested in communicating using extremely low power.
Is that actually on the air?
Yeah, it is. Right here. Just these few little wires.
Low power communication is an art, a science, and some magic thrown in all at the same time. On the receiving end, low power usually means weak signals. And the challenge is pulling weak signals out of the background noise. A leader in weak signal detection is Nobel Prize winner Joe Taylor, K1JT.
The basic objective was to make it possible to make meteor-scatter contacts, two-way contacts, reflecting signals off the trails of meteors, and possibly also by moon bounce, at the very lowest possible signal levels. I mean, it was well known that you could do these things with high power and big antennas, but I wanted to be able to do it with moderately high power or even low power, and antennas that you could put up in a neighborhood, not necessarily a huge Texas array of 32 Yagis or something like that. Because of my own background in science and physics, I do the number crunching in the language I know best, which is Fortran. That makes some people laugh, but it's an ancient but honorable language, I assure you.
Joe's programs are enjoyed by hams worldwide and distributed free via the Internet. 4 days in May is held concurrently with the Dayton Hamvention. At the Hamvention, everybody's looking around for friends they only know from over-the-air contacts, and often they find them.
Hey, Doug. Hi, Rob Kuhn, Zen0KGM. Hey,
good to meet you, Rob.
Very good.
It's good to see you here on planet Earth.
Absolutely. Anyway, so. Thanks for all those great contacts up on the space station. We made at least 15 or 20 between us, and I really appreciate that. And you did a lot, actually, for getting amateur radio back on the space station, and that's great that you helped us out with that.
Thank you, Rob. It was an amazing experience. It was I'm kind of new to this community.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of fun with the ham radio on board the International Space Station.
Inside or out, there's something great of interest for every DIY builder, maker, hacker, or ham. Ham radio is a DIY paradise.
Hi again, it's me, Diana. I hope you enjoyed this quick tour through the world of amateur radio. We share this world with close to 2 million people around the globe. And I hope one day to meet you on the air.
Come and join us on the air. Surf the skies and find new friends. Let the world unfold before you. You'll be the one who sets the trend. 'Cause you're not like those poor old wage slaves. Change your life and start anew.
Whoa. That's
come
real.
On the
I'm dizzy already.
You'll feel free and you'll be happy too.
Wow. Well, who can say that ham radio operators are old-fashioned or old technology? I think the American Radio Relay League did well in showing off that ham radio is right there on the cutting edge and doing things that you just wouldn't believe with stuff that's hanging around the house that Julian and I and Hannah will see next week at CES. But behind this great video was the man that rolled it, and that is Bill Pasternak. And Bill, we'd like to welcome you aboard Ham Nation again. Good to see you, my friend, and how about giving us a little background on what it took to produce this great video, Bill?
Okay, well, Gordo, it's nice to see you, Bob, and everybody. Well, it's nice to be back with you. To answer your question, it took 14 months from conception of the basic idea to the time we saw Keith Gillespie make the last edit and said, wow, it's done. And if you've ever done a TV show or a movie, that last edit is the thing that you're always waiting for. We put together a wonderful core team. I was asked to produce it. Dave Bell, W6LQ, who's been associated with, I'd say, about 90% of the ham radio films and videos since the late 1960s, directed it. And if you go to imdb.com, you'll find that Dave is a very well-known director. Our writer was Henry Feinberg, K2SSQ. He's known for many things, including the designer of that communicator in E.T. for E.T. to call home, and with the speak and spell. But before that, he was a producer for the original Watch Mr. Wizard show. Our cameraman, who did, I'd say, about 80% of what you saw is Dave Booth, KC6WFS, and he lives that away, about a quarter of a mile, and is a good friend of mine. And The editor, who has worked on several shows now for the American Radio Relay, Keith Glisby, WA6TFD. And you can't work with a finer editor. There's, I mean, I've worked with a lot of them over the years, and he is the best. And we had a wonderful, as you know, this voiceover person that that of course was Mark Abramovich, who's known in NT3V, but in professionally is known as Mark Abrams from KYW in Philadelphia. He's a news producer and air personality, and of course our hostess on screen, Diana Eng. So I think we had a wonderful core group, and that's what made this whole thing possible. It was no one person; it was the group mind and the group effort. And we must, of course, thank Alan Pitts over at WNAGP at ARL headquarters, who served as our executive producer and interface with the league. So it was a very, very strong, very cohesive group of people that put this together.
Wow, that is terrific, Bill. Well, Bill, how about that interview with Dave Bell? And gosh, you and I go back to Dave Bell from some of the very original film videos that you did. I think on 8mm. Remember those days, Bill? It goes along with that 520.
It wasn't 8mm. We shot 16mm with Cine Eclairs, if I remember correctly. Double system. We recorded on audio tape. But yes. Dave was wanting to be with us tonight, but unfortunately, or fortunately for Dave, he's enjoying the wonders of Hawaii. So knowing he wasn't going to be here, I went over to the office with one of our video cameras, set it up, and I let Dave tell you about his role and a little bit about what he found out. This was a learning experience for all of us, as well as making a movie. So, John, if you've got Dave's video, could you roll that now?
So Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, called me one day, and he basically asked me if I would direct a video for the ARRL, which would be aimed at makers and hackers, and that whole DIY group that has suddenly sprung up out of the weeds and is having meetings and is having conventions and is doing all that kind of stuff that hams have been doing for 100 years. Alan Pitch, the PR guy for the ARRL, thought that a film, a DVD for the makers and hackers might well recruit a lot of them into the ranks of ham radio. How could I resist directing something like that? I mean, there's nothing to it. Bill did all the work. I just went out and pointed my finger where I wanted the camera to shoot. And most of the time, the camera shot there. The revelation to me was a group of hams from Austin, Texas, that we ran into a convention in Plano, who had turned a bunch of ordinary computer routers into what amounts to a ham radio network that they called a mesh network, M-E-S-H, mesh network. And it was very clever and, as my experience, unique. And you can see how a network like that in an emergency situation, the routers could be spread out around an expanded headquarters, and all of the vans and tents and all of that would be talking to each other on this UHF or VHF frequency, whatever it was, digitally. And some of those hams that put that network together might not have even be hams were it not for the uniqueness of that enterprise. And they keep expanding it, and Lord knows where that's going to go. Other things, the rest of the film is basically ham radio stuff that most hams are very familiar with, but not all makers and hackers are familiar with. So in 8.5 minutes, we try and grab this whole wide world of ham radio and jam it into that short time frame to attract makers and hackers into what we all think, of course, is the world's greatest hobby.
Well, there you have Dave, and Dave has directed every, almost every major ham radio video and film since 1969 with the Ham's Wide World. If you've never seen the Ham's Wide World, it's kind of a classic because some things never change, and a lot of what's in that show has never changed.
You're right.
Yeah. And Gordo, yes, we do go back to those days. And I still remember when we were generating smoke so we could see your laser beams while you were teaching a class. And I forgot how we did that. I think we had a can of dry ice or something. And we were trying to make so that because the camera couldn't see the actual beam. So we made the beams visible. Remember that one?
Oh, I sure do. That was on the World of Ham Radio. And then, of course, you helped Dave, and Dave helped you do the New World of Ham Radio. And those two are indeed classics, Bill.
Yeah, that was the New World of Amateur Radio, which was done in 1986, was actually produced by the late Roy Neal, K6DUE. And he both produced and wrote it, and I think that was the last show we did over at CBS Television City. We then moved editing elsewhere. We worked with Frosty Oden and 6ENV, and that was quite an undertaking. That took almost 2 years from the time of inception till the time of seeing that thing when Frosty made the last edit. And again, it was another of those "Wow, we've done it!" You know.
Oh, that I got to tell you,
as a producer. Or, you know, and you have two feelings when you've done a show. Wow, it's done, and dang, it's done. What next? And I'm already working on the what's next.
That's great. I'll tell you what's next. You got to retube that Kenwood TS-520 in the background, right?
No, that TS-520 is in A1 immaculate condition. It's already been gone over a long time ago, and even though I have the FT-847 you can't see over there, the TS-520 is my standby. It's my buddy. That was Roy's rig, and when he moved to North Carolina, I bought it from him. I've had it now for 20-some-odd years, and I wouldn't be without it. That's, that thing works. You turn it on, it works. I've had to change a couple of relays out, like every TS-520, but that's about it. I've, of course, hyalized my MC50 microphone. It still looks like an MC50, but it's got a Heil cartridge in it, and it sounds good. And we'll see you. We'll hopefully see you on the air after the after Ham Nation with it.
But, all right, Bill. Well, Bill, thank you so much for joining us with Ham Nation, and continued success with all the great edits that you do to the many videos that are out there. And again, congratulations to the American Radio Relay League by seeing that ham radio needed a new focus in the PR. And that is, we don't just mess around with old tubes. We take apart modems and have them doing things that you wouldn't believe. Well, thanks again. And Bill, the chat room is a buzz, so we'll let you check into the chat room as well. And again, thanks to the ARRL for this one of the first looks of this brand new video. Those that would like to use that at a club meeting, contact your local ARRL director in your area, and they'll make sure that you link up and get that video. So Bob, over to you, and then I'll let you bring in Cheryl, and we'll maybe address some of the questions in the chat room. And Bill, thanks again. Bob?
Yeah, Bill, thank you so very much. Your work is always so well done, and amateur radio appreciates what you do. The Newsline thing, I have problems with that name. I'm still calling it Westlink. That tells you how I've
been around. Yeah, it does go back a long time, doesn't it, Bob? 1976.
76.
1976, well, Jim Hendershot, WA6VQP, and myself put out the very first Westlink radio news, and it was broadcast to Los Angeles on 223.5 Simplex from a guy on a motorcycle on top of Oak Mountain.
Oh,
13
you got
or 14 people listening, maybe. Who knows?
I bet there were more than 14. Well, listen, thanks very much for all you do for this great hobby we call ham radio. And we'll have you back again. And, of course, you're here every week. That we have Robert Sudock come on and give us our newsline report to keep us up on things. He'll be on just a little later. But thanks very much. And, Gordo, you know, as I listen to this, we start hearing a lot of things that many of us that's been licensed for a long time and in the hobby, we kind of take it for granted. We know we knew Roy Neal very well, worked him on the air, and then Henry Feinberg and all of these names, these producers, these major television producers, they're all hams. Roy Neal was such a great guy. And for any of you that didn't know Roy, or if you don't know who he was, you're going to think about this. Whenever you saw the space shuttle, the space capsule, let's go forget the shuttle, go back to that capsule. When you'd see this man standing beside the countdown clock, how important it was to see John Glenn go up and all that. There was this guy that would give you the countdown and tell you about the what was going to happen. That was Roy Neal, K6DUE, and he held court on 14252.5, I think, just about every day.
Yeah.
Henry's going to be a guest. I was going to bring him on tonight, but he would have only gotten a few words in with everything we got planned. So we're going to feature Henry on a show here in a future month. Henry is the guy that built the little transceiver or the communicator in the show E.T. He also did the speak and spell. Now, we're talking about a ham radio operator did all of this. And that's what intrigues me. We wouldn't have the VCR. We wouldn't have cell phones. There are so many things that we wouldn't have today if it wasn't because of amateur radio. And that's why it continues to be such a focus in my personal life. And I know Gordo's life and George, who will be on with us in a while. And Cheryl's doing a lot of things with her nets and her voiceover work and everything else. It's just such an incredible hobby. And I'm really honored to be a part of it. And we're glad to bring you all of this action here on Ham Nation. Gordo, you know Henry really well. And isn't he a fascinating guy when you get to hear someone mentions this guy together? Just wire clips and whatever, right? Something.
He is just amazing. He can take almost anything and transform it and make it work for ham radio. Well, that's just great. And by the way, the chat room is abuzz. It says that the Quads meteor shower is tonight. They were talking about meteor shower work on the news. So take advantage of a few random incoming meteors. And yes, in 2 weeks, we'll be at Quartzsite, Arizona. And next week, as you know, Julian and Hannah and I will be at with Leo and the whole gang at the TWIT remote studio in Las Vegas, Nevada for the big CES show. So, Bob, I'll turn it back to you, and then we've got our next video about the D-Star winners. Bob?
You guys had a lot of fun at that. Before we do that, let's see what's going on with Cheryl. Cheryl, you're having a lot of fun these days, I know, because I hear you on and I talk to you a lot on 75 meters, you and your husband. What's going on in your area that's exciting these days? And we're really glad to have you here as a part of Ham Nation. K9BIK, there she is.
Hi there, K9EID. How are you, Bob? I wanted to make a comment on that video, and because in the chat room, we had some folks here that said hats off to WA6ITF and crew. They liked it so much. I wanted to just chime in here and say that. But in our area, I guess we're just going to be doing some things with the Lake County Racies bunch, some new, I think it's going to be a simulated emergency test coming up that we're involved with there. But we do have a few questions I want to get to. I know we are on some time limit here, so I don't want to short that by my gabbing on and on here, if you will. So we have a number one question is, what is a good filter to use because they're getting some RF noise from outside their home into their radio? Would you like to take that one, Bob?
Well, most of the transceivers today have great noise limiters in them. I've been... experimenting a little bit with the and I don't like to pick out one piece of gear because they all have great things, but I have to say the little ICOM 7000 has an incredible noise blanker. They have two of them. Actually, there's three. Gordo, do you get the experiment ones with the 7000?
Oh, that's quite a receiver, and you're right. That noise limiter, noise blanker circuit, infinitely adjustable with DSP, that is one great way to help cancel power line noise.
Yeah, and also the 897 has a pretty good noise limiter in it. And MFJ, they actually make a product just to get rid of outside noise. And it actually uses another antenna that you put out, and it senses the any noise out there and enters it back in out of phase. Do you remember that we did here some weeks ago? Out of phase. And you want to come back here on the 24th. We're going to do some of that really cool stuff again. We're going to talking about a lot of things of how to use this and do that. But this out of phase business is really great, and that's how many things work. But you might want to try that MFJ. And Cheryl, those are just a few of the answers. But a lot of it has to do with the transceivers themselves. They have great noise limiters in them.
Oh, okay. Great. And there was a question in there, too. Do you actually remember a magazine, CQ VHF magazine, was mentioned on the chat room here? And I think they said there's some archives that are available on, I think it's archive.org was the name of the website. But they wanted to know if you had heard of that before, CQ VHF magazine.
ZSQ, the editor, very well. We were one of the writers for that magazine back in the early 60s. It was a great piece, a lot of technical stuff for VHF crazies like myself. And I was one of the first single sideband stations on 6 meters back in 1958 with that very piece of gear. Let's see, where's that in the rack? Get out of the way, Heil. There it is over there. The 20A, that little guy right there, I built that from a kit in 1958. I was a teenager in high school, and I built a transverter, and my Elmer helped me do that. But all of that stuff was covered in the VHF magazines. Also, Ham Radio was another wonderful publication, and 73 Magazine. The articles in there were absolutely fabulous, and I still have many of them. And I would suggest everybody go back and look at some of those, because the science never changes. And in those days, we were building a lot of it. And Gordo, you used to write for 73. I read articles years ago. You were quite prominent there as a writer.
Yep. Those were great magazines, and those were great days to be writing. Well, that is great. Well, Sheriff, we can interrupt just for a moment. We've Absolutely. Got the D-Star QSO Party Awards. And John, we'll let you roll that in just a moment. But Julian and I went up and talked to Dave and Don, and they were the winners of the new ICOM transceivers. And they took part and won the D-Star QSO Party. John?
Winners, winners, winners. It's a D-Star winners contest, and we have the winning team here in Southern California.
Don, KE6BXT.
Thanks, Don.
David, AA6RV.
Thanks, Don, and thanks for populating the D-Star airwaves in the D-Star contest. Now, can you give me a little background about the contest? I know it grows every year, but what's the principal reason behind the D-Star contest, Don?
Well, with this year, it was to make as many country contacts as possible. And if you turned in a log with one country, you got one chance to win the radios. There were 15 radios that were awarded. And if you made five countries, you got a second ticket for the drawing. 10 countries, you got a third ticket. And 20 countries, you got four tickets. So I did over 20 countries, so I got four chances in the drawing, and one of my tickets was one of the 15 winners.
Wow. Winner, winner, winner. How many countries again?
I had 23 countries.
23 countries. Now, Dave, you were out there as well, and what was your method for winning the contest?
Well, for me, it was all about countries. I wanted at least 20. I got 21, and the best one I probably had was the one from Austria. And in Austria, I broke into the middle of a QSO just to get that last country that I needed. So it worked out great.
Wow. Now, did they speak English, or did you have to develop, like, your own language?
I used my broken German to break in there, and they were very kind to give me the time to give me the QSO.
Wow. So D-Star is everywhere. Now, Don, what was your most memorable contact?
Well, I think talking to Japan, and also all the contacts that I made, the people made a real effort to speak in English, so I didn't have to speak in any foreign languages.
Oh, that is just terrific. Well, the D-Star ID 31 is the great prize. And again, what is your technique? How did you do it? All on the radio? Did you do it at the computer? What was your technique, Don?
Well, I've had a 91 AD for a number of years. And then I switched over to the DV dongle because I could use that when I was on the road with my laptop computer. But for this contest, you couldn't turn in a log that you made with a DV dongle. You could talk to somebody that used one, but you couldn't log the contact if that's the method you used. So it forced me into the manuals to be able to learn how to use my 91 AD and my 2820, the 2 meter, 70 centimeter mobile radio, in order to connect and unlink reflectors to my local repeater. So it really gave me an appreciation for using the radios more, but I still use the dongle when I'm on the road.
Oh, that's great. Now, Dave, did you have to break out the instruction manual as well?
No, I was good enough that I knew how to use my radio. The thing that I had to use, though, for those that are interested, it's called the DVAP. So I actually had all three things going. I was using a thing called the PAPA system here in Southern California. We have a bunch of link repeaters with the D-Star system. I was using that. I used the DVAP, which stands for Digital Access Point Dongle. That's what we got. This is basically allows you to connect to the internet, and it makes it into a home repeater. So this puts 10 milliwatts out, and you're able to connect via simplex using this and the internet. And I was able to connect from my house using my HD, and that's how I was able to get through most of my contacts.
Wow, on an HD working the world. Well, here's a brand new HD, or soon each to be presented from ICOM America. In fact, we just talked with Ray. What did Ray have to say?
Well, he wanted to congratulate us on participating in the contest and for being one of the winners. And he wasn't able to be here because he was on a family vacation, but he really appreciated that we took part in the contest and that we're promoting D-Star.
Yeah, you bet. Ray was coming through loud and clear. Huh? What did he say to you, Dave?
It was very appreciative of the fact that we put this together so that we could promote the whole D-Star system. So great, great, great hobby. Allows you basically to play DX without on a VHF-UHF system.
All right. Well, we now have a new UHF DXer coming to you shortly. Winners, winners, winners. We're here at Ham Radio Outlet Anaheim. Store manager Janet Margelli's got some great prizes courtesy of ICOM America. So, Janet, what do you say we give them their great prizes that they worked so hard for during the ICOM D-Star on the air get-together? Janet?
On behalf of ICOM America and Ham Radio Outlet, I'd like to congratulate Don and Dave for their great performance in the D-Star QSO party and present them with their brand new ID31As. Congratulations to you both.
Thank you, and I'd like to thank ICOM and Ray Novak for helping sponsor to put this contest on and giving us the opportunity to win. Great contest, great fun time. Don?
Yeah, I had a lot of fun in the contest also, and thanks to ICOM, and I can't wait to use my new radio.
Open these things up. Get them going. I think they're already programmed for the local area. Get on the air. Do it.
Okay.
Bottom first.
Bottom first.
Bottom first.
Push.
This is a test.
There you go.
This is a D-Star test.
Mine's on. Oh!
Yeah.
And you can tune in to those lectures. Maybe tonight on Reflector 14, Module C. And Julian and Hannah, thanks so much for the great video. Also, we have two ID31 winners also in the chat room, BE6BHO and VK5 Zulu Echo Alpha. Congratulations as well. So, Cheryl, I'm sorry I interrupted, but I was so excited to get the D-Star folks on. Cheryl, back to you, and then I'll let you introduce Robert with Newsline. Cheryl?
Oh, great. I just wanted to just say there was one question about D-Star in there that, as long as we're talking about the subject, and it is great that they won those radios. They sure look nice, the pair of them. I'm sure they'll have a blast with those. The question is there any way to listen to D-Star via radioreference.com? That's some website I'm not familiar with. Do you have any information on that?
I do, and Joe for ADX has got all that information. And what I'll do is we'll put it out on the chat room in just a moment, and they'll have it. But you bet they can listen in without actually having a radio.
Okay, very good, very good. I think that's all the questions I have right now. And I did want to say hello to WB4QDA on 3847. He seemed to say hi to everybody here at Ham Nation tonight. And I just wanted to acknowledge that through the chat room, of course.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Cheryl. And boy, it sure is nice to have you there. Well, let's now go to Newsline. Let me go to Bob because he's the main man of this show. Bob, are we ready for Newsline?
Oh, there's no main man. Now it's main people because we have Cheryl and things are great. Cheryl, one thing, if you're going to mention John, you better mention Phil or you're going to be in trouble. You know that, don't you?
Well, why don't you mention his call sign then, Bob? And JD too, right?
That's right. A whole bunch of guys on 47. That's great.
Hi, Phil. Hi, JD. I better say hi.
Yeah, Cheryl, why don't you go ahead and introduce Robert and get things cranked up on Newsline. You want to do that, please?
Okay. We have a warm welcome to our Newsline news for tonight. Say, we welcome you. Bob, go ahead and take it with Amateur Radio Newsline for the news tonight, and we look forward to that.
Thank you and good evening, everybody. These are the Ham Nation headlines for Tuesday, January 3rd, 2012. Rescue Radio again tops this week's news as hams around the world are called to action to provide emergency communications for responders. In the North Sea, severe winter storms flood parts of Norway and Sweden, while heavy tropical rains flood parts of the Philippines, and hams in Thailand work to rebuild RAST headquarters station HS0AC, devastated by 7-foot floodwaters that hit that country late last year. But first, mark your calendars for Sunday, January 8th. It's Kids Day. Kids Day is a twice-yearly on-air event to help encourage young people to learn about amateur radio and the fun that it has to offer. To accomplish this, hams are being asked to devote a short time window to promote both the terrestrial and satellite operations to youngsters by providing a place to make contacts with other Kids Day stations around the world. For more information, it's online at www.arrl.org/kids-day. Christmas Day, and in Overhalla, Norway, amateur radio operators and the Norwegian military were called up to provide backup communications as that nation coped with its damaged infrastructure and communications failures following heavy rains. 3.715 megahertz on 80 meters was the first frequency to be activated. On 160 meters, 1.902 megahertz was selected as an alternative. The nets remained in operation until Wednesday, December 28th. Meanwhile, the Norwegian Radio Relay League's Emergency Communications Service did not issue a clear frequency request. It asked other radio amateurs to avoid using any frequencies where storm-related communications had been ongoing. And the search for survivors continues in the Philippines, where flash flood waters struck that nation's southern section. Hundreds are missing. 1,500 have died. Local hams in the disaster area are now doing their best to help out with relief efforts. The storm triggered massive flooding in the DU-9 call district. The Philippines group, known as the Ham Emergency Radio Operators, activated response nets on 40 and 2 meters, but we have no specific information on the frequencies used. And ham radio groups from around the world are being asked to assist the Radio Amateur Society of Thailand, which is seeking to rebuild its headquarters station, HS0AC. If you recall, massive flooding hit that nation late last year. Several thousand dollars in cash and materials have already been donated, but that is only the beginning of what's needed to bring the station back on the air. You can find photos of the damage brought to HS0AC online at www.qsl.net/RAST. This week's classic broadcast mic from the 60s and 70s comes to us again from the Chris Clemenson collection. It's an Electro-Voice Model 666 dynamic microphone. The spec sheet describes it as an all-purpose microphone designed to provide wide-range reproduction under a great variety of conditions. It goes on to say, because of its excellent and uniform polar response, it is especially useful in locations where ambient noise and severe reverberation exist. See how great it works? Next week, another classic broadcast mic. But we're running a bit late, so in the words of Walter Cronkite, KB2GSD, that's the way it is, Tuesday, January 3rd, 2012. Wow. Drive your browsers over to www.arnewsline.org, and you'll find the full text and audio editions of this week's newscast. For Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, our producer and editor, I'm Robert Sudock, WB6FDF. 73. Happy New Year. And we'll see you next time on Ham Nation.
Wow. I want your voice, Robert. Huh?
Oh, we can't buy those voices. That's really great. That's wonderful. Thanks for doing that. And, of course, thanks to Bill for the editing and all of the wonderful things that Newsline does. And standing by in the wings, we got another great voice from down in Mississippi. So you guys all get out your soldering irons now because we're going to need them. And we're going to get George fired up here and ready to go and see what's happening in the old smoke and solder part of the Ham Nation show. George, how are you doing? And Happy New Year. I missed everybody here, and I really missed all your episodes of smoke and solder while I was out running around all over the globe. How are you doing?
Doing great, Bob. Good to see everyone this year. I think we're going to have the best show so far this year tonight. We did put out another Amateur Logic while Ham Nation was on break, and it's available at amateurlogic.tv. And that was to kind of help get people through the holidays, being that we had 2 weeks off here. And if I'm correct, we're out next week as well because of CES.
That is correct. There will be something, I think, Wednesday or Thursday. Gordo can give you some more detail on that. But we will not have a show next week. So we'll have to hold off until 2 weeks from now.
Well, that's good. I'm sure we'll have something to cover that as well. This time around, I've had a two-week break, and I kind of got lazy, and I didn't produce any new videos, although I've been working on some. They're not completely finished yet, but I thought I would bring out an oldie but a goodie that I had done several years back that anyone messing with the radio needs to know how to do this. It's soldering a PL259 connector.
Yeah, yeah.
I prefer RG213 over RG8 when I need a large coax because it's lower loss and it's got a little heavier shield on it generally. That won't matter so much on HF frequencies, but on VHF and UHF frequencies it could. Now for the connector, we've got a PL259 here.
I'll hold the connector up beside the cable here, and I want to have just a little bit extra sticking out the end, just in case. So I'll figure that about right here would be the right amount of center conductor, so I'll put a mark on my cable there. Now, I like to use a single-edge razor blade to get through that shield and cut a good and smooth edge on it there. If you're going to use one of these, though, be careful. And you only want to use enough pressure just to cut through the shield and not all the way through to the center conductor. As I do this, I can kind of feel it cutting the shield. That's my clue to let up and not go any further. I'm going to go to a pocket knife. Right above the shield there, we'll cut it back. And there again, being careful on how much pressure we use, because we don't want to nick the center conductor, because that'll make it weak. I'll give it a little twist here. We'll estimate that we'll need about this much of the shield exposed. So we'll take our pocket knife again, and we'll be real careful this time, because we don't want to break that shield. And as small as the conductors are in it, it would be real easy to break. There we go. Let's compare it against our connector again. Looks like we should be in good shape. Now, to solder PO259, we're going to need some pretty serious heat, not enough to burn up the cable and the connector. In a lot of cases, a pencil soldering iron won't be strong enough for this. I'm going to use my trusty old Weller WLC100 soldering station here, which does get hot enough. And I'm going to change out this smaller tip and put a larger one in there. Although I'm using solder that has flux in it already, and I'm using an electrical grade solder, not acid core, since that'll just destroy the connection later. A little box here of Kester rosin soldering paste. So we'll add this extra flux to the shield here to make it work a little better. When you add extra flux to it, it just helps the solder to flow and stick better. You can do it without getting quite so hot. A little soldering paste in a case like this is a good thing, in my opinion. Now, this is the trick that I like. We want to tin this whole shield. Rather than just sliding the shield up in the connector here like it is loose here, which is just going to bunch up and get all tangled up inside of here, we'll go ahead and tin this and make it a good, flat, solid piece there. Then when we go to put the solder in the holes here, process will go much quicker, and we won't have to get this connector as hot. We'll start by heating up the shield, and then we'll apply the solder right to the shield, not so much to the iron. And as you can see with that paste on there, it immediately starts to flow. Now, this shield has got to be good and clean. If it's corroded or tarnished, you're not going to get the solder to flow on it like you want. You see there's still some excess flux on there. We'll take a rag and some denatured alcohol and clean that excess flux off of there, because it's not needed now. We'll take our blade now and go back and cut off this extra center insulation here so that it ends about the same place that the shield stops. Now let's put a little flux on this center conductor and let's tin it as well, because everything that's tinned in advance is just going to make this go quicker. Take that denatured alcohol and paper towel here and clean some of that off. Now we want to look here to be sure that there's no solder bridges between the shield and the center conductor, and that everything looks good and clean there. Let's look at our distances again here on the PL259. And that looks about right to me. Since this, we believe, is a silver-plated connector, it's probably going to solder pretty easy. But there's a lot of connectors out there that won't solder so well, especially the ones that you get at Radio Shack. And it kind of helps if you take a drill bit and put it in the holes, twist it around, and just kind of get us down to some good, clean, bare metal. If you notice here, it's not wanting to go down. That's because the shield here with the solder on it is a little bit fat to go down inside the hole. This is an old set of crimpers that I bought at an auto parts store years ago, and it's just the right size for crimping around this coax and getting this down good and round again. Oh, it slips right on now. At this point, what we need to do is just screw the connector on down onto the outer jacket here until we can see our tin chilled through the holes here, and we're ready to solder to it. We've also got to make sure that the center conductor comes out the tip. Now, what have we forgot? One very important thing, slide it down, making sure that we've got the right side going toward the connector. If this were a cheaper connector, there's a possibility I would have tinned around all these holes with some solder before we ever started to make sure that, we could get the heat to it quick and wouldn't burn up the connector. And here's our center conductor sticking out the tip. And we're also going to need to clip it back because it's a little too long, which is a good thing. Better to be a little too long than a little too short. We'll put just a little bit of our soldering flux paste on here. We'll heat up the connector just a moment before we start. And now we'll begin applying the solder in there. And just depending on how good the connector is that you got, this could be tough to do. The flux really helps out, though. We've got the shield firmly soldered all the way around. And since we had tinned the shield in advance, that's a really strong connection there now. And we'll go back and clean that up with another paper towel and a little bit of denatured alcohol. So I don't want to touch my fingers to it, but it does come off a little easier if you do this while the connector's still hot. All four holes look like they're soldered well. So all that left now to be done is to solder our tip. Once again, we'll just put a little bit of flux on there. Now, this is a nice gold-plated tip, so I'm going to try not to get a lot of solder on the outside of it. Just get it to flow down inside. And that's a good idea anyway, because if you get a lot of solder around the outside, it's just going to make the pin too big to go in a lot of the equipment that you want to plug it into. Now, capillary action will cause that solder to be sucked up in the hole, so we won't really have to force it in there. Looks like we did it, and it looks like this was a good connector because the solder took to it real well, stuck good. It didn't melt the insulator here that holds the center pin in, so that must have been Teflon or some type of good material. A lot of times the connectors that you get from China, namely some of the Radio Shack ones, that will melt down inside there. If you're not very careful, you've wasted the connector once that's happened. One tiny little burr on it, so we'll clip that off. And you notice we didn't get a lot of solder around the outer edge of the pin here. We still see the gold plating all the way around, which, you know, gold's probably not necessary for RF connection of the power that we'll be running through it.
So there you have it, how to install a PL259 coax connector. Now, you can be the one installing PL259s for everybody else.
That's great stuff. Great stuff, George. You're the best, and we appreciate that. And as I said earlier, the science never changes, and we've been putting PL259s on for decades. So thanks for showing all of us and revisiting, for some of us, how to do that. It's wonderful. I really appreciate you doing that. Well, we're starting to get down to the close here, and I need to mention a couple of things. First of all, next week, we will not have a program. Ham Nation is off the air because the whole Twit Army is off to Las Vegas, and Gordon's going to join them, and we'll have some videos coming back from there, so that'll be good. They're also going to be live, so stay tuned to twit.tv, and you'll see all the live things throughout the convention. And Meteor Shower tonight, don't forget to be listening. It's on right now, so 144.tv. Well, 200 and below to check that out. And for all you Facebook people, you might want to check out our Facebook, Heil Sound Radio. Facebook, of course, you go to that.com/Heil Sound Radio. We're going to have a contest coming up here in a couple of weeks. And so you want to get tuned in to the Facebook pages on that. And one last thing is Monday night, I'm going to be doing a ham radio program via Skype to the Dade County Amateur Radio Club. And so if your club would like to do any programs, we are available. Gordon, George, and myself, not all together, but separately, we do radio clubs. It's really cool. I did one in the UK a couple of weeks ago. It was absolutely fabulous. We had such a good time with the club in London. So you guys, you want to spark up your amateur radio clubs, why, send us an email, and we'll try to get in some time that we can come and visit your club via Skype. So that's pretty much what we have here. And I thank BSW. I got my new mixer going. And Gordo, you got your mixer all ready going and fixed. You had a little problem there in the beginning. But your Elisa's mixer from BSW is working really well now, isn't it?
I love that, Elisa's. Julian, who's going to be accompanying me at CES, got it all wired in properly. And it's humming. Well, I mean, not humming, but it's working great. And we can always tell who did a good solder job by backing off the outside shell and looking to see how they filled in the holes. That's our way of knowing who's got it. Okay, 73, we'll see you at CES, and then we'll be back.
Okay, Cheryl, we'll see you. You'll be on 75 meters later, yes, 3850 and so on. And we'll see you here back next week. Thanks for all your help, Cheryl. I appreciate it.
I enjoyed being here. Thanks for having me.
Okay, and 7204 is open, and I'm not quite sure where else, but they'll be all over somewhere. So we'll be checking on the amateur radio bands for you. So 73. And again, Happy New Year to everybody. And thanks to Leo and the whole troupe at the Twit Studios for giving us this wonderful time here on Ham Nation. 73, everyone. So long.